Okay, Alexander, let's talk again about what's happening with Armenia and Azerbaijan, Nagorno-Karabakh. And we have news that Armenia has asked for Russia's assistance, and Russia has said they will help out. They will do, and I quote, "Russia has pledged Armenia, quote, all necessary assistance if the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict expands to Armenian territory." The ceasefire, the US brokered ceasefire, has been breaking down, day by day. They have that caveat in there if, at all times it seems that the Russians are putting if it expands to Armenian territory. Okay, I understand the qualifier there, and I understand that that's part of the collective defense pact that they have. But I'll repeat it again. The more Putin capitulates to Erdogan, the weaker Putin looks, not only inside of Russia, but in the eyes of the world. And he is once again, he's losing a lot of political capital here, a lot of PR capital. I mean, it's just not a good look for him. It really is not a good look for him. I've been following Putin for a while now, and I've never seen, for lack of a better word, I've never seen him display such type of, I don't know, I guess weakness. I guess I don't know if that's the right word, but it doesn't suit him. It doesn't suit his persona, and it doesn't suit it doesn't suit Russia either. It doesn't fit, and that's my point there. Anyway,
I
what's
mean,
going on?
I think the thing to always say about Putin is that he always comes across, contrary to what many people think, he's always slow. I remember exactly the same criticisms were made during the Ukrainian war in 2014. Lots of people were saying, where is Putin? Well, as the Ukrainians were announcing that they were closing in, what is he going to do? There was great uncertainty that he would act. And then suddenly he did act. I think this announcement actually is an important moment because it means that the Armenians have now invoked the Collective Security Treaty. The Russians have said they will act on it. The very same day, there was a meeting in Russia of Russia's Security Council, which is the major policy-making body in Russia that discusses foreign policy and defense policy. It's, if you like, their sort of major cabinet, and it's chaired by Putin. And we know that the situation in the Caucasus and Nagorno-Karabakh was the major topic. Now, what we don't know is what the Russians are going to do, but I'm going to make a guess, which is that what we're actually going to see is we're going to see more Russian military people on the ground in Armenia, and that Armenian troops will start to move out of Armenia to take on the Azerbaijani army along the strip of territory near the border between Armenia and Iran, because that's really where the only real area where there's been any kind of Azerbaijani advance. If you look at the whole region that has been fought over, the Azerbaijani army has not managed to make much progress in the north. It's along this area, along the border with Iran, that they managed to make some advances. The point is that the Russians have said that they will provide Armenia with the assistance that they need, and I'm sure that they will. And in fact, over the last couple of days, it seems that there has actually been an ebb in the fighting. We haven't heard very much more about, even from Azerbaijan, about more advances being made. So I think this is probably the moment when, the pressure starts to build even further, and we see the fighting start to ebb down. I'm going to add something else, which is that, when we did our live the other day, one of our viewers asked us a question about why had Russia agreed to include Turkey in the negotiations, and I was surprised about that because I hadn't seen anything to that effect from any Russian side. I've checked. In fact, the Russians have definitely not agreed to have Turkey participate in any negotiations. But they are apparently now putting pressure on both sides, which basically means the Azerbaijanian side, to agree to Russian peacekeepers being deployed in the region. So that's, I think, where this is now heading.
All right, so the goal of getting the Armenians and this strip of land by Iran, the goal is to remove the
Azerbaijan
troops. I mean, is that to push them back?
To push them back, because the point is, the Armenians say this is threatening them, and the Russians have said, yes, it does appear to threaten you, because we're prepared to provide you with all possible means. It doesn't necessarily mean that the Russians will attack the Azerbaijanian troops there. I think they will put pressure on the Azerbaijanians to pull back. And if they don't, we will start to see the Armenian army, which has not actually participated so far in any of the fighting, start to become involved. It's important to say all the fighting up to now has been between the army of Azerbaijan and the army of Nagorno-Karabakh. There have been Armenian volunteers fighting in Nagorno-Karabakh, but not actually the Armenian army itself.
What is Iran saying to all of this?
They back Armenia, and they've also deployed their troops to the border as well. So, though I don't think they will be involved directly in any fighting either, they are backing Armenia, and they're an important player, because Russia doesn't have a border with Armenia. It has to send its supplies and its troops in either by air, which they can do, in other words, fly them in, or through Iran. But it seems that the Iranians are allowing them to do that.
And if Erdogan escalates, if Turkey says, okay, because Armenia is entering the theater of battle, say.
Yes.
We're also going to up the ante.
Yes. Well, this is exactly the point, because I think this is where the real danger is, because Erdogan has actually made those kind of threats. He has actually openly spoken about Turkey intervening directly if there is a threat to Azerbaijan. I think if that happens, that the Russians will actually, I mean, they've made it very clear that they will protect Armenia. And Putin, in comments that he made about a week ago, actually invoked the genocide of the Armenians by Turkey. He actually referenced it. So if Turkish troops become visibly involved on the ground, they are present there. Let's be very clear. There are Turkish military personnel actually involved in the fighting now. But if Turkey openly intervenes, the Russians will become more involved. By the way, the Russians have also escalated their military strikes in Syria against the Turkish-backed rebels in Idlib. And they've been bombing, apparently, convoys which have been taking oil from there into Turkey. So, and they also attacked a training center where and may have killed as many as 200 Turkish-backed jihadi fighters. So they are escalating in Idlib also. So that, I think, is also intended as a sort of, you know, warning to Erdogan also.
Yeah, it's like an asymmetric message. But who controls the airspace now? Who would you say controls the airspace? No one? Is it Azerbaijan? Who controls the air? And if it is Azerbaijan or Turkey, from what I'm understanding, they do seem to have a drone superiority, I guess you could say. Along with Israeli drones and Turkish drones, yes, are definitely, it seems to be the thorn in Armenia's kind of side. But will Russia do anything to counter that? Will they help Armenia gain the air?
I think that is highly likely. By the way, the same thing happened at the start of this year in Syria. If you remember, back in January, the Turkish military launched a series of drone attacks on the Syrian military, which was carrying out operations in Idlib province. And large numbers of Syrian armored vehicles were destroyed. And the Russians responded by deploying various anti-aircraft, anti-drone equipment that they possess, particularly a system known as the Pantsir, to Syria to counter these drones. And I'm sure they will start to do the same in Armenia also. You are absolutely right. In my opinion, the single advantage that Azerbaijan has in this fighting, well, they have an advantage in artillery. They've got much more artillery than Armenia does. But principally, it's been these Turkish drones. And I think partly the reason for that is that Russia, which is Armenia's major arms supplier, took a very long time to develop its own drone technology. It's now coming forward, and the Russians are starting to field very advanced drones, but that has come much later than it has with the other major military powers. And the result is that Turkey had an advantage in drones over Russia and was able to supply drones to Azerbaijan, whereas Russia, which is behind in drone technology, has not supplied Armenia with drones to anything like the same degree. As I said, that balance is changing, and the Russians are very, very advanced in anti-drone warfare technology, but they've not supplied Armenia with drones comparable to those that the Azerbaijanians have and which the Turks have given to the Azerbaijanians.
Yeah, the Israelis too.
The Israelis too, absolutely. To give you an idea of how far behind Russia fell in drone technology, they actually the Russians at one point bought drones from Israel themselves. After their war with Georgia in 2008, they realized that they'd fallen very far behind in drone technology. So they actually bought a drone system from Israel, and they had a license agreement and they built it themselves. And when they first intervened in Syria in 2015, most Russian drones in Syria were actually licensed copies of Israeli drones. Now, as I said, the Russians are producing their own drones. They produced a system called the Ochotnik. They produced another one called the Kosar, which are probably superior. In fact, they're definitely superior to the ones the Turks have been supplying to Azerbaijan. But they've only started to appear in significant numbers now. So Russia was well behind in this technology. They're only now catching up. But in terms of countering it, they are actually very advanced.
All right. And if they manage to succeed, Armenia and Russia, and they do get the Azerbaijan troops, which have advanced in this strip close to Iran, if they manage to get them to retreat, are we going into more diplomatic talks, or has there been any signal that they're going to try diplomacy once again? Yes. And who's going to be doing it? Russia, France, US, all of them?
No, Russia will be doing it. I think if Donald Trump wins the election, then the Russians might work with him to some extent. I think they'll be far less keen to work with Biden, actually, certainly over the Caucasus. So that's one point I will quickly make. But I think the Russians will be pushing again for negotiations, but that may disappoint both the Armenians and the Azerbaijanians, because from their point of view, they've been pushed into a frozen conflict, which isn't really satisfactory very much for either side. The Russians have their interests in the Caucasus. They're not identical to the Armenian interests. They're not identical to Azerbaijanian interests either. They will not want to see Armenia defeated. They will not want to see Turkey establish itself in the Caucasus. But at the moment, and I've said this previously in previous programs, their interest is to keep the conflict going, but without actual fighting taking place. Very frustrating for all the people there, but that's what they will do.
All right. Has Turkey created a de facto alliance with Ukraine?
Oh, yes. Yes. And this is
it's not off topic at all.
It is directly on topic, and it comes directly to the point that you were making at the start of this program, that Putin has lost support in Russia over this issue. And this Turkish de facto alliance with Ukraine has been very, very widely publicized and talked about in Russia, and has caused an awful lot of concern there. And at a meeting at the Valdai conference, which is a major Russian talking conference where the important people in Russia get together, Putin was asked very openly some very, very hard questions about this. And he was very defensive. And people were saying to him, why are you continuing to work with Erdogan when he openly backs Ukraine and talks about getting Crimea returned to Ukraine and saying that Turkey will never recognize the Crimea's union with Russia? And there was even talk about Turkey and Ukraine cooperating in military technology and in military industries, which apparently has really riled some people in Russia. So Putin was trying, I thought, not very convincingly to square the circle about this and say, we understand that the Turks have their views, we have our views, we still want to maintain good relations with Turkey, Turkey has its policies, we have ours, and that shouldn't interfere in our good relations. But it was actually striking to see how much on the defensive on that issue Putin was. Again, it's caused a great deal of annoyance in Russia, and it's caused annoyance with Putin. And it may not be a coincidence, by the way, that just the other day, Putin proposed a reform to Russia's Federation Council, which is the upper house of the Russian parliament, which appears to prepare the ground for him to become a senator there, as opposed to being president. In other words, it appears to suggest that somebody has been telling Putin, well, perhaps you're losing your grip and maybe you should start thinking about doing something else. I'm not saying that's the case. Please make this very clear. Maybe that these events are not related to each other. But certainly, both in the Caucasus and in Syria and in Libya and over Ukraine, but perhaps most especially over Ukraine, Putin's policy of engagement with Erdogan is coming in for ever-growing criticism.
All right, we'll be following this story very carefully. Okay, Alexander Mercuris, thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Hit that notifications bell. Please go to PayPal, Patreon, Subscribestar. Please donate to us there. Also, look for us on BitChute and on Odyssey as well. We are on those platforms, so please follow us there. And also go to the Durant Shop, pick up some merchandise. And also go to the Patriotic Legacy website and pick up a Patriot Beacon 3. They have a contest for the Black Patriot Beacon as well as a Duran shirt. Use the code Duran20 at checkout. You'll get 20% off and you'll get entered into the contest to win a Black Patriot Beacon 3 and a Duran t-shirt. You'll be seeing that exact contest on your screen right now. Alexander.
And indeed, and this is the Patriot Beacon 3 made by our friends at the Patriotic Legacy. It is a flashlight, the best in the world, made in the United States, ships internationally. This is my Patriot Beacon 3. The one that is in this contest, I understand, is very like it. It's also black, but of course, this is mine. And I'm very, very delighted and glad to have it. It is the best flashlight in the world. It's got this incredible, powerful beam that you can see. You can dim it a little if you need to, because, say you're in a confined space or you've got people around you and you don't want to dazzle them. Or you can actually have it flashing, which is a good way of alerting people to where you are. But it's not just a flashlight. Alex calls it the Swiss Army knife of flashlights because it's got so many other extraordinary qualities. Firstly, it's solar powered, so you don't need to worry about batteries, provided you keep it in the light during the day. It's there for you in the dark whenever you need it. Because it's solar powered, you can also use it. You've got a port there to recharge your other appliances, your smartphone or your tablet or even your laptop. You've got the port there to do it. You've also got a compass in the handle, which you could see. So if you get lost in the woods, I often get lost in the woods. Well, I got my Patriot Beacon 3, so that can guide me to wherever I need to be. If you've got your dogs with you, or you need to have somebody come to you and you need your dogs, well, you've got an alarm which you can play. I don't want to do it too much because you can see that my dogs have just seen me wielding the Patriot Beacon 3. So that's making them very excited. They think I'm going to go out with them in a moment, which perhaps I am. You've also got use it as a tool. You can use it as a hammer if you want, or if you are, you know, on the road and you see somebody's had an accident and you need to get them out of the car, you can use it to break the windscreen, tap on the corners, and it just comes down very quickly. And you've also got a seatbelt cutter there that you can use to cut somebody out of their seatbelt. But the really fantastic thing about the Patriot Beacon 3, apart from the fact that it's the best flashlight in the world, and apart from the fact that it is the best, it's got all these other things, it's the Swiss Army knife of flashlights, is that it is just beautifully made. It is incredibly strong. It is incredibly rugged. You feel it when you've got it in your hands that this is a real quality product. It gives you that enormous confidence that the best products made in the US always do. It's an outstanding flashlight. It is beautiful and wonderful to see and hold and use. And can I say, it's made by our friends, the Patriotic Legacy in the United States, but it ships all over the world. So you've got to be part of this competition. You've got to get yourself one. And it comes with one of our great T-shirts also, one of our great shirts also. And you can see that I'm wearing one, this with the flag of Australia, a great English-speaking nation that we all feel very, very close to here in Britain, where I'm speaking to you from. But we've also got, mugs too, with also flags of countries. This one with the flag of the United States that you can see, our amazing magic mugs. We've got hats. This one with the flag of Britain. There you go. Also, Alex has also got a mug with the flag of the United States. And this one has Britain on it. We've got the best hats. We've got trucker's hats and baseball hats and also amazing hoodies. And we've also got our ebooks. Alex has been expanding the range of goods in our shop. You can support us by coming to our shop. You can support us by finding us on all our other platforms, you know, BitChute and Odyssey, and at the same time you can support us on Patreon or Subscribestar. But come to our shop, support us, so that we can continue to provide us with these extraordinary programs that we do. And please get yourself a Patriot Beacon 3.
All right. You will find all the links to the Patriotic Legacy and the Durant Shop in the description box down below. Alexander Mercuris, thank you very much. Till next time, everybody, take care.